Now, anything you'd like to raise or discuss or reflect about, raise your hand and I'll call upon you. Anything's fair game.
The path of service now continues with an informal question and answer session. My name is Tammy Simon, and to make it easier to follow this discussion, I will repeat the questions from the audience. The first question is about the relationship between the individual and society. How can we respond effectively to oppressive social structures?
My sense is that society is unfolding as it unfolds. As I understand more about what an incarnation is about and what it isn't, that wisdom and that kind of emptiness leads to a certain quality of compassionate action. And that, then I become, since I am interdependent with everything else, as I change, it all changes. And then, what I do is I work on myself as my offering into the system. And I work on myself through working with others. I mean, that turns out to be my strategy. It's called, like karma yoga. In other words, whether society will change or not, how much of that is necessary to the game of incarnation? Because many, many people, when you're dealing with a society, where you're dealing with a cross-section of evolution in individuals, in which some of them are ripe to see through the veil and some of them aren't. And to see that society is somehow wrong at this moment isn't even true. The out of balance is all part of the greater balance. I mean, how are you going to see it? It's all relative pathology. So it's all doing fine from one plane. I mean, were it not for the society situation, you and I wouldn't be here now having this discussion. So is it wrong? The social structures follow after the real change has occurred, which is a change in consciousness. Okay, a change in reality, a change in paradigm. William James said a great thing. He says, when a real change occurs, he says there are three stages. The first thing people say is, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard of. The second thing they say is, that should be stopped before somebody gets hurt. And the third thing is, I thought that myself about 10 years ago. Questions?
What about people who are imprisoned by codependency? Could you discuss how one locked into such a pattern can link back up with their own inner guide?
To the extent that you are a form, you are in codependency. I mean, it's built into the system. You can see it as an error, but it's the way of things, that everything is dependent on everything else. And you've got to be very careful about the illusion of free will. I hate to join the issue, but I must. Because who it is that thinks they can escape from anything has been had. I mean, whoever is free, since all form is within law, your thoughts are form, and they're within law too. So the thought, I think I'll go hear Ram Dass, which you thought was free will, it didn't come out of nothing. It came out of all this other stuff. And if you were hip enough, you'd be able to predict, now she's going to say, I think I'll go hear Ram Dass. So you weren't free. So once you know that, you relax. Because you're so busy thinking you're supposed to do something about something. And the only part of you that's free is the part that has no form, that's no part. So that's interesting. You are free, but who you think you are isn't. So you see that predicament. So who you think you are is codependent. Who you think you are can't escape from that. Because the attempt to escape is reinforcing the who you think you are, which is always codependent. See our predicament. I mean, I'm just sort of spelling out the problem as we start to sort of play with it a little bit. Now, I think the art is to learn how to, as Don Juan said, huff and puff and make believe it makes a difference, even though you know that it doesn't. See? Yeah? I'll tell you, I've got to do this thing, even though I've done it many times. It's such a good routine, I just can't resist. Some of you know it well, so. In all the years that I have studied psychology and been a professor of therapist, been in analysis for many years, took drugs ad nauseum, ad ecstasy, went to India, had guru, had practices, meditated for 20 years now, done many practices. In all that time, I have not gotten rid of one neurosis, not one. You would think, sort of, that just by that by attrition, some of them would have gone, you know? But I can still find all of them, just these subtle little things. But now, as I've said before, instead of these huge monsters that take me over, like, you know, like lust, you're going along and then suddenly lust comes and you're, and then you're, won't you come up and see my holy pictures, you know? And you just turn into this thing. Instead of these monsters that take you over, what they are now are these little schmoos. Ah, sexual perversity. I haven't seen you in weeks. Come on in and have tea, you know? And what happens is that your personality, which we revere so much in this culture, is so real, it becomes your style. Your neuroses are your style. And they're sort of sweet, you know? I mean, we all have neuroses. It's not mine. I mean, mine are real. I love those kind of dialogues. Like, I'm depressed. You're really depressed? Yeah. Are you fully depressed? Yes, I am fully depressed. No part of you that's not depressed? No. No, I'm really depressed. Tell me, is the part that's talking to me noticing the depression, is that depressed? Well, no, that's just noticing the depression. Aha. See? And then you sneak up on it. You keep cultivating the witness that is witness to your personality machinations and delights. So in a way, what I'm suggesting is that the things stay, but you change your relationship to them because you keep cultivating a deeper context in which they exist. And as the context gets broader, they become less things which are doing you in all the time. But they're still around.